Happy 4th of July, everyone. It's now 2 o'clock, and this is Captain Rick reporting. I'll be reading from today's edition of the Decatur Herald and Review, and the first article is very appropriate. It's entitled, More Than Just Fireworks. Park District has a full slate of entertainment planned for holiday, by Jalen Cook. Decatur. When thinking off the top of his head, Dan Miller said it's hard to count how many fireworks shells will be used to light up the sky over Lake Decatur. But one thing is for certain. He said there will be no short order of dazzling imagery and vivid colors for those planning to descend upon Nelson Park to enjoy Wednesday night. That's what we pride ourselves on, said Miller, senior vice president of Elgin-based Mad Bomber Fireworks Productions. There's so much variety as opposed to sticking with just one group or one classification of shells, he said. This marks the 7th year that the Decatur Park District recruited Mad Bomber to provide the fireworks for its Independence Day display at Lakeshore Landing. The roughly 25-minute long display will cap a variety of park district activities in celebration of the holiday today. Miller said the display will feature shells ranging in shape, size, and color, from traditional primary ones like red, white, and blue to more intricate ones such as aluminum and gold. The fireworks will be placed on a barge that floats to a safe location on Lake Decatur, allowing the Mad Bomber crew to fire them into the sky remotely using a computer system. Jamie Gower, the Park District's Director of Recreation and Facilities, said it costs about $25,000 to put on the fireworks display. As for making it all up, Gower said, and Miller said it takes several hours to plan and set up the barge. The Mad Bomber crew is scheduled to start working in the early hours today. They'll be out there all day long, Miller said. However long it takes to get everything lined up, they've got to load it up, check it, do a continuity check, and verify that everything is going to go off in the sequence that we wanted. That takes the better part of at least 8 hours. It's a lengthy effort, but the quality of the Mad Bomber's firm's work will be apparent come showtime, Gower said. We can count on them, he said. They're a professional company, and that's why we started contracting out to them. It's been good over the years. Before the fireworks display begins at dusk, those who visit Nelson Park throughout the evening will be treated to two free concerts that will serve as the second of the Park District's Shake the Lake concert series. The performances will take place in the Horseshoe parking lot west of the Beach House restaurant, 2301 South Lakeshore Drive. Best of Summer Stock, BOSS, the Park District's youth theater program, will kick off the evening with concerts at 5 p.m. Both the Boss Senior and younger group Boss Junior will perform. Central Illinois-based hip-hop pop band Fun DMC will follow Boss at 6 p.m. Shake the Lake is typically served as a showcase for country performers, Gower said, but for Wednesday, the Park District and Newhoff Media decided to shake up the lineup. It's a nice change of pace for the 4th, he said. Early Wednesday morning, the Park District's Independent Day activities will kick off with the Staley Firecracker Road Run Walk. Participants will compete in either a half-mile, four-mile, or eight-mile run, or in a two-mile fun run-walk throughout Nelson Park. In addition to that event, rides on Scoville Zoo Endangered Species Carousel will be free with paid admission from 9:30 a.m. to 6 p.m. Overlook Adventure Park is offering a $20 mini golf special for groups of four and the Fairview Family Aquatic Center will host pool games and prizes during open swim from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Gower said community members should also be aware of busy traffic patterns throughout Nelson Park during the packed schedule of events, especially when the time comes for fireworks. Everyone is pretty much down there, Gower said, referring to the concert's location near the beach house. It's a sea of people. It's hard to put an exact number on it, but it's in the thousands easily. The Park District said those attending the Shake the Lake concert and fireworks show will not be allowed to park along Lost Bridge Road on US 36. The only road closure in the area will be on East Cantrell Street, starting at the Snack Shack gas dock at 2541 East Cantrell. Anyone driving through Nelson Park throughout Wednesday should only expect rerouting during the Staley Firecracker Road Run, which started at 7 a.m. and ended at 10 a.m. this morning, the Park District said. After the fireworks show, all traffic from Pier 36 lot, the Boathouse lot, and the roadway west to Chandler Park, 1510 Lakefront Road, will exit to the west on Lost Bridge Road at the park's entrance. Traffic coming from Lakefront Road, the Beach House lot, and Nelson Park's Dog Park will exit west on East Cantrell and turn north on North 22nd Street. Traffic going along South Nelson Boulevard will be directed north onto US 36. The Park District suggests that vehicles headed northbound on Nelson may use the side streets to be west to the west in order to avoid long waits on US 36's stoplight. Gower said that many portions within Nelson Park, 180 acres, will be available for parking. As for the best place in the park to see the fireworks, if you're able to get up on the hill toward Pavilion Number 2, I think people will really enjoy that spot, he said. It's a good show pretty much anywhere. Where else to see the fireworks? Tonight, Stagpile, Assumption, Forest Reserve, Park, Bement, Fairview Park, Casey, Nelson Park, Decatur, Liberty Memorial Park, Dietrich, Effingham High School, Effingham, Prim Road Park District, Lincoln. Thursday, Sunset Inn, Clinton. Saturday, Fraser Park, Mount Pulaski, Clark County Fairground, Marshall, Coles County Memorial Airport, Mattoon, Dam West Recreation Area, Shelbyville, Wyman Park, Sullivan, Taylorville Lake, Taylorville, Warrensburg, Fortson's Club, and Irwin Park, Tuscola. The next article is about law enforcement. It's entitled, Macon County to Get Full Body Scanner. $159,000 system will help stop contraband from entering jail, by Ryan Boyles. Decatur. A new scanning tool set to arrive next month will give Macon County Jail officers a deeper look at arriving inmates. Thanks to a donation from Macon County Sheriff Howard Buffett's private foundation, the jail is set on August 3rd to have a full-body security scanning system, which can scan, detect, and provide any image of any contraband or foreign objects on or inside a person. The cost of the machine is $159,000, which is fully covered by the foundation. The device is similar to a Transportation Security Administration scanner at an airport, said Sheriff's Lieutenant Christopher Thompson, the jail superintendent. While it will not act as the be-all, end-all to prevent contraband from getting into the jail, Thompson said it's another piece of equipment that would strengthen security and protect officers and other inmates from dangerous items smuggled into the facility. This will help get us closer to the 100% catch, he said. The new scanning system is the latest in a number of upgrades made to the Macon County Jail this year. In February, Buffett's foundation provided $1.3 million to upgrade the jail, including software and software licenses, more than $100,000 for a new prisoner transportation vehicle, and $122,000 for a correctional officer position that would implement a new jail classification system. Jail screening has been in the news across central Illinois in recent months. In April, a man was accused of smuggling illegal drugs inside his rectum into the Macon County Jail, which later led to four inmates being hospitalized after using the drugs. Rommel D. Hill, 34, faces 18 charges related to the smuggling incident. A Missouri woman was sentenced to 2 years in prison in May after admitting to having a handgun inside her body during her booking at the McLean County Jail. The screening system will be the first part of the booking process and will not replace any existing steps officers take to admit inmates. There will be some exceptions, such as not using the scanner on a pregnant inmate or those who have implanted defibrillators. Thompson said they are still finalizing policy for how to handle inmates when contraband has been detected. It is likely, he said, that each situation would be handled on a case-by-case basis. He said the tentative plan is for officers to ask inmates to remove contraband themselves if it can be done safely. If the inmate could not or would not remove the item, officers would ask the inmate if they would be willing to allow a medical provider to remove the contraband at a medical facility. If the inmate refuses, Thompson said the officer would take several steps, depending on advice from a medical provider. That could include waiting until the inmate passes the contraband through his or her bowels, or, in worst-case scenario, that includes the contraband posing a fatal threat to the inmate, officers could request a search warrant to have the item surgically removed. The idea is for the inmate themselves or medical officials to handle removing the item, Thompson said. At no point will correction staff physically remove anything through a cavity search, if you will, he said. Real estate. Decatur named the most affordable housing in U.S. by Holden Lewis of NerdWallet. The personal finance website NerdWallet has named Decatur the metropolitan area with the nation's most affordable housing after an analysis of home costs and income in the city. At the other end of the affordability spectrum is San Jose, California metro area, where high incomes are outmatched by stratospheric home prices. A home is most affordable when it doesn't cost much more than a year's pay. Decatur is an affordable market because the median house costs about 1.5 times the median annual income. Median is the midpoint, where half of the values or incomes are lower and half higher. In comparison, there's San Jose, where a typical household earns a six-figure income, but a median single-family house costs about 12 times what a typical household earns. Every quarter, NerdWallet calculates home affordability for 172 metropolitan areas by comparing the median annual household income and the monthly principal and interest payment for a median-price single-family home. After accounting for a 20% down payment, the house payments were calculated at an interest rate of 4.45%, the average rate for a 30-year fixed income mortgage in the first quarter. Payments don't include insurance, property taxes, or homeowner association dues. The comparisons reveal the five most and least affordable markets for buying a home in January through March or the first quarter of 2018. The rankings were compiled using data from the National Association of Realtors, the Census Bureau, and NerdWallet surveys. Most affordable metro areas. Number one, Decatur, Illinois. Median home price, $73,000. Median household income, $46,198. Principal and interest payments, $294, equals 77.6% of median monthly income. In March, single-family homes for sale in Decatur had been on the market for a median of 119.5 days, according to Realtor.com. The national median for all home sales was 63 days. Number two, Cumberland, Maryland, West Virginia. Median home price, $86,200. Median household income, $45,508. Principal and interest payments, $347, 9.1% of monthly income. Listed homes in Cumberland had been on the market a median of 136.75 days in March. Number three, Elmira, New York. Median home price, $100,800. Median household income, $51,269. Principal and interest payments, $406, 9.5% of monthly income. Homes in Elmira had been on the market for a median of 97.5 days in March, just over a month longer than the national median. Number four, Birmingham, New York. Median home price, $103,000. Median household income, $51,360. Principal and interest payments, $415, 9.7% of monthly income. Homes for sale in Binghamton, New York, had been listed a median of 108.5 days in March. This will be familiar. Number five, Peoria, Illinois. Median home price, $114,800. Median household income, $57,090. Principal and interest payments, $463,000, 9.7% of monthly income. Peoria was the quickest selling market among the five most affordable, with homes listed a median of 77.25 days in March. Now we'll switch to the least affordable metropolitan areas. Number one, San Jose, Sunnyvale, Santa Clara, California. Median home price, $1.37 million. Median household income, $110,040. Principal and interest payments, $5,533. 60.3% of median household income. Buyers have to act fast in the San Jose area, the center of Silicon Valley. For sale homes spent a median of 17 days on the market in March, according to Realtor.com. Number two, Honolulu, Hawaii. Median home sale price, $775,500. Median household income, $80,513. Principal and interest payment, $3,125, 46.6% of monthly income. Honolulu, a popular market for international buyers, had a median days on market of 52 days in March, according to Realtor.com. Number 3, San Francisco, Oakland, Hayward, California. Median home price, $917,000. Median household income, $96,677. Principal and interest payments, $3,695, 45.9% of monthly income. Just to the north of Silicon Valley, almost homes here sell almost as fast. In the San Francisco, Oakland, Hayward area, homes spent a median of just 22 days on the market in March, according to Realtor.com. Number 4, San Diego, Carlsbad, California. Median home price, $610,000. Median household income, $70,824. Principal and interest payment, $2,458, 41.6% of monthly income. California has four of the five least affordable metro areas. San Diego homes were listed a median of 32.5 days in March, according to Realtor.com. Number 5, Los Angeles, Long Beach, California. Median home price, $545,500. Median household income, $65,950. Principal and interest payments, $2,198, 40% of monthly income. Homes for sale in the Los Angeles area have been on the market a median of 33.5 days in March, according to Realtor.com. Data sources: National Association of Realtors median metro home prices for the first quarter of 2018. The Census Bureau's median household income from the 2016 American Community Survey, one-year series, the latest available data. NerdWallet's Daily Mortgage Rate Survey. Realtor.com's Market Trends data from March. Related links: NerdWallet tips for the first-time home buyers, NAR Metropolitan Median Prices and Affordability, and Realtor.com Market Trends Data. Mount Zion goes smoke-free. Village asks residents not to light up in public spaces, by Ryan Boyles. Mount Zion. Mount Zion is the first municipality in Macon County to adopt a smoke-free, tobacco-free policy in all public spaces owned by the village. The policy, which went into effect Sunday, is a result of a partnership between the village and the Macon County Health Department to promote healthier environments in public places, such as Fletcher and Goodwin Parks. There are no fines or penalties attached. We're just asking our residents and our employees not to smoke or to use tobacco in our parks or near village property, said Village Administrator Julie Miller. There's children at the park and other families, and the science has been in for a long time that smoking and tobacco products cause great health risks to people. Along with the health benefits, Miller said she hoped the policy would reduce the number of cigarette butts found throughout the parks and other public spaces. "We're hoping that this just keeps our community cleaner and healthier for everyone," she said. While Mount Zion is the first Macon County municipality to adopt a smoke-free policy, others, as well as agencies and businesses, have worked with the health department for several years on similar efforts, said Brandy Binkley, Director of Human Resources, Public Relations, and Health Promotion for the county agency. For instance, the village of Forsyth has signs in public parks asking residents not to smoke. There are a number of reasons to promote the idea of a smoke and tobacco-free community, Binkley said, including the health factor, reducing the number of cigarette butts littered in public spaces, and to set an example for children who may be encouraged to smoke if they see someone do it in public. It's important to keep public spaces safe and healthy so everyone can enjoy them, she said. Mount Zion has purchased 20 signs at a cost of $200 to inform residents of the new policy. Those signs will begin appearing in public spaces this week. The Smoke-Free Illinois Act, enacted in 2008, already bans smoking inside most buildings and vehicles used by the general public, as well as bans smoking within 15 feet of entrances to such buildings. Smoking and the use of tobacco on public properties are also banned by the state law. While the new policy is self-policing, Miller hopes it will raise more awareness for the health risks related to secondhand smoke exposure. People have the right to smoke, but they also need to think about other people and be courteous, Miller said. People just think because they're outdoors that they're not bothering someone, but sometimes it does bother them. More information. The Macon County Health Department is always available to partner with others who desire to become smoke-free and/or tobacco-free. For more information, call 217-423-6988, extension 1130. For individuals looking to quit using tobacco products, you may visit the Illinois Tobacco Quit Line at quityes.org or call 1-866-QUIT-YES. Man accused of tying child to a chair, by Tony Reed. Decatur. A Decatur man is facing a preliminary charge of domestic battery after police said he tied his girlfriend's 6-year-old son to a chair in their home's basement and left him there for hours as punishment for bad behavior. A sworn affidavit from Decatur police officer Alex Amaya said the man also told his girlfriend's 2 other children, both younger than 10, to bring down cookies to be eaten in front of the boy, who stayed tied up for several hours. Amaya described the other children as saying the boy would be encased in rope around his arms, chest, hands, stomach, and legs, and his mouth would be duct taped shut. Interviewed about how long her brother would stay that way, one of the other children said, She stated he believed it was 2 hours because this is how long he is usually forced to sit down for punishment, Amaya wrote. She advised she times it all on her iPad. Amaya said the abuse came to light after the boy and his siblings had been removed from the home by the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services earlier this year. DCFS investigators acted after reports that the boyfriend and the mother of the children had been smoking methamphetamine in front of the family. The man, arrested Monday afternoon, remained in the Macon County Jail on Tuesday in lieu of posting $50,000 bond. All preliminary charges are subject to review by the state's attorney's office. The DCF Child Abuse Hotline is 1-800-25-ABUSE, 800-252-2873. And that's the end of part 1. I'll be back with part 2 after the break.